In this edition of the TWBC podcast, we talk to one of the main industry players. Dave Wingerter appears on this podcast now.
The expressed views of the guests on this podcast are theirs alone and not necessarily endorsed by the host, TWBC, or any associated sponsor. Conversations that are robust yet balanced, on point and to the point. You are listening to The Talk of Tournament Water Skiing. This is the TWBC podcast. And now, here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, greetings one and all. Salutations. My name is the aforementioned Tony Lightfoot. I'm glad to have you on board for this edition of the TWBC podcast. Now, I'm over here in the Hilltop Lake, which is situated not too far outside of Seattle, just a little ways north of Seattle. And pretty much in the same area, you'll find many of the brands and the makes of skis at the high performance level, one of those being HO. And the man who is the vice president of HO Sports and is responsible for a lot of their R&D is Dave Wingerter. How you doing, sir?
I'm great. Welcome to have you guys.
Good. So, Hilltop event coming up. Always a fun event to be at as we look over a shoulder here and see another person go out there and practice and get set for the competition. So the competition itself, the Hilltop Pro-Am presented by Syndicate, has your name and your company associated with it. How proud are you to be a part of this one?
Oh, I'm very proud. I mean, been skiing here since I moved to Seattle, I think 16 years ago. Fell in kind of with this crew up here, Gordon Skoog and his whole family, loved the lake. He had some nice tournaments up here. We started doing records. And now I think it's grown to one of the largest events in the world in terms of competitors and cash prize. So very proud to work with them and excited to see the skiing this weekend.
And probably equally proud that that pretty much all of the skiers that are associated with the Syndicate brand, at least on the pro team level, are here as well.
Nearly everyone's here. Very proud of them. We have a great crew. I think we got great team camaraderie. We develop product together, and it just means a lot. They all show up and compete, and I think they really enjoy it as well.
Indeed. I mean, I see Benjamin over there a little bit earlier on. Nick Adams was here, Jamie Ball, Will Asher, Jonathan Travers. They're all here skiing on each on their particular skis. Now, your team, the HO Syndicate team, is probably one of the largest out there in pro skiing so far as just the sheer number of skiers. Taking their design input into consideration, they're all ski on slightly different models of skis. They're even on prototypes right now coming into this event, and you know they give their feedback. You report back to them. They report back to you. How much of a challenge is it to take all of that information from all of those skis of various designs to try and come up with something or some skis that will hit the marketplace?
Well, I'd say that's my favorite part of the job. So to me, that's just natural. It's not much work. I think even if I didn't work for HO, I'd hopefully be hanging out with this crew and talking skis and brainstorming new ways to design them. Yeah, it does get tough, but like I said, we've been doing it for a long time together. Will and I have been working together for 16 years, and it's getting easier developing skis. He's knows so much about them, and he's understanding what he needs and what the consumer needs, so it's definitely making my job easier. And Benny's doing really great as well. The whole team, John, Jamie, the whole crew, they get it. They understand that we got to work together to make great product. We got to keep the consumers in mind, but at the same time, we got to scratch the itch and we got to push the sport and figure out at the end of the rope, you know.
Does their technique on top of a ski kind of dictate what shape and everything, the flex pattern that they ride, or is it the opposite way around, where you give them a ski that you think would suit them and say, ride on this a few times, tell me what you think, and then kind of go from there?
I think the different styles that skiers have, whether they're pros or amateurs, definitely suits different models. That's why we have multiple high-end models. Will, for instance, you know, prefers, he doesn't need aggressively deep concaves compared to some of the skiers. You'll see some of the amateurs here. He likes a bigger ski. I would say the tip rocker, he prefers is flatter. And then other skiers like Jamie, the ski she's riding, you know, has quite a bit more rocker. She runs her boots further back. Like, you learn their taste in skis. Mm-hmm. And my job is to make sure that our new product has that built in so they can ride it at the highest level. And at the same time, that their tastes sync up well with the consumers. And so that's what experience does for you. You learn what works and what doesn't.
Now, you ski yourself. You compete in the U.S. national level. You've done one of a few pro tournaments, San Gervasio and what have you, and you've skied here, obviously, at the Hilltop.
Yeah.
How much of what you do out the water dictates the product, or is it all exclusively from the pro skiers on your stable that, you know?
Yeah, no, I understand. You know, it's funny, I'll be honest. When I first started, I was very cautious not to just make skis for myself, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it'd be very easy to fall into that and just say, well, I'm a skier, I'm pretty good, I've won the Nationals a couple times, I can run in a 39, like, this is what's best. I really listened to the athletes a lot. And the great thing is, a lot of the athletes we have on our team, we have similar feel. Obviously, they do it closer to the boat, but we're on the same page. But as I've gotten older, I've learned to trust my gut and to make stuff that works for me as well and not be afraid of that. And often when I've gone that way and made stuff that I like, it seems to resonate well with the amateur skier and the consumer as well. You know, the thing about really high-end skiers is, yes, they need an exceptional ski to run 41, but they're also very adaptable where they can kind of run 39 on a lot of stuff. And so you, then in a way, they're not the greatest tester for that. And guys like me, or, you know, like we're sitting here, Dave Miller or a high-level amateur, we're good testers in our own way. We really are. Even though we don't ski as well as the high-end pros, I mean, if it works for us, it's usually, and it works for Will and John and Jamie, it's a good sign.
All right. So, I mean, are you a believer in the contention that there is a 36 miles an hour market and a 34 mile an hour market in terms of slalom skis at the high end?
Yeah, I think years ago I had a concept where we had 34 mile an hour skis and 36 mile an hour skis. We had A's and S's, A1s yeah, and S's.
That would be my next question.
Yeah, and you know, I think what I hit right was there's different styles of skis, but maybe I didn't get the speed thing right, because what happened in the end is a guy like Terry Winter, who skied for HO at the time, ended up on the 34 mile an hour ski, and a guy like Greg Bedell, who was 34, ended up on the 36 mile an hour ski. So typical, you know, life lesson, doesn't go as planned. But in the end, you know, there's different skier styles, and we're tapped into that then, and we've refined that since, and that's why we have two or three high-end models now that really suit different skier styles.
All right, then, going to the A models from way back in the day. I actually had this conversation a little bit yesterday, and there seems to be one or two skis that customers that have been loyal to the HO Syndicate brand, I've always said, you know what, I'm skiing on a great ski right now, but darn, I wish that ski that you produced several seasons ago would make a comeback. Any truth to that notion?
Oh yeah, I hear it every time, man. The first ski that kind of my crew designed was the A1, and to this day, literally yesterday, I had a conversation with a bunch of the people on the dock. They said that still was their favorite ski, and they remember it, and they ran their PB, and will you ever bring that back? I always ask them, I said, have you ridden it lately? Because we have, and I don't actually love that ski anymore. I mean, at the time, I think maybe it was probably the best ski in the world of that brief moment in time, but we have all the old molds, I'll say that. One thing we have done has been conservative and keep our old molds, so the A1s, the A3s that Will ran the 2 of 43 on, the S2s, the original pro mold. We do Jamie Bull's Alpha. We're re-releasing that this year. Mm-hmm. I did keep all the kind of the favorites. So maybe one day we'll have a heritage collection and re-release some of those with modern material, flex patterns. And so I don't know. We'll see.
Well, you heard it here first, yeah. Folks. The Syndicate Heritage Collection. Limited edition. Very few made, I guess.
You got it.
All right, then. So we talk a lot about the skis. What about some of the soft products? Because, I mean, it hasn't gone unnoticed that the jackets, the vests, the gloves and everything, they all play a vital role in the complete package. especially the vest. And I mean, I look and see Jamie Ball in the Syndicate vest that, you know, I mean, she skis on. It's lighted. It's featherweight out there, and yeah. it really suits her. I mean, for a lot of ski companies, the soft product is an afterthought. Not with Syndicate, right?
No, I mean, we're a larger company, and we do a ton of business in life vests and wetsuits and gloves and all that, and we have a big team, and so we really try and tackle, put our best foot forward in every aspect. So we work with the athletes on the vests, and, you know, wetsuits and gloves, and I think, you know, often we have some of the best product. I'd say our gloves are probably the best gloves in the world. I mean, you see a lot of them. You
see a lot of 41 tail.
Very popular. It's a good sign when you see pros who ski for other companies using your gloves. You know, it means you're doing something right. Our vests are solid. I think our wetsuits are pretty great as well. We're in the Northwest. We wear a lot of rubber up here, and so we have pretty good wetsuits. I've made sure they're decent because we got to wear them to get ready for the season.
And probably one of the most requested products is that thing that that JT was. It's that dry hoodie thing. The thing that dry yourself off with. I mean, how many people come up to you and like ask you, hey, can you hook us up with one of those?
Everybody, yeah. Yeah. The poncho towel, or the poncho owl, yeah, we call it. Same thing. I mean, we were up here cold, wet, skiing in March, and I think we got it from a surf brand or something. We're like, we got to make this. So, but it's really my team, guys like John Yan and Brett Perry and all these guys that work for us who are graphic artists, and they find the latest trends, they find the materials, they make it look cool with the Syndicate logo, and we do a good job of putting it on the athletes, and they wear it around, and that's how it grows.
Okay, so far as product development is concerned, going back to that a little bit, I mean, when you go and produce a new ski, I mean, it has to kind of start from somewhere. So I mean, just kind of describe for me how long that process takes from conception to what you want that ski to do to it finally hitting the marketplace.
Yeah, it's a bit of a process. Some go smoother than others. I'll give you an example. The Syndicate Works 1 that's coming out, or is out actually as of the Nationals.
Okay.
We cut the original prototype mold August of 2021, and we launched it to the public at the Nationals in August of 2022. We did 4 mold cuts, so from, you know, in between, to try and get it refined to where we thought it was ready for the general public. And that's a lot of hours of CAD, building skis, testing material. So yeah, at a minimum, it takes us 1 year. I would love 2 years sometimes to really get it dialed. But I think, you know, the people want new skis. They're hungry for them. My pros wanted them, so we really worked hard this year to get them done.
Does the pressure to put something out in the market stem more from the customers, or is it more corporate concerns?
To be honest, it's not. It's mostly internal amongst the Syndicate team, mm-hmm. believe it or not. I mean, these guys are demanding. I mean that in a great way. They want new stuff. They want to get through their hard pass. They want to run 39 or 41, depending on their, you know, their ability level. And they're pushing. They're not satisfied with the ski from last year. So they've really pushed me. And then I've been fortunate enough that HO understands that and have invested in that. Because we don't necessarily need to cut a new ski every year for business reasons, but we definitely have for keeping the team satisfied and keeping our learning going. You know, that's how we've learned so much about ski design. That'll help us a lot. It's a good investment in our future, you know.
All right, then. So let's shy away a little bit from the whole syndicate deal. I mean, that's the reason why you're here. But let's take a brief stroll and converse a little bit so far as slalom skiing as a whole and at the pro level. Is there anything that you see out there in these tournaments that are going on around the world with the Water Ski Pro Tour and what have you that gives you a sense of optimism going forward for the future of the sport?
Oh, totally. I think if you look at the pro calendar this year, I mean, there are so many pro events. And I remember just a couple years ago, maybe you could count the number of pro events on one hand.
Mm.
And they're different than they used to be. They're no longer like the 80s where they had the Bud Pro Tour and you had thousands of people on the shore. But there are a lot of these like pro-am tournaments like Hilltop, You've got mingling like today with the amateurs and the pros. You've got a beautiful webcast, Tony, that your crew and Vince and the guys are doing. Adds a lot of credibility to the sport. And so it's different than it used to be, but I think it gives me a lot of hope for the future. You see a lot of juniors in these events, like mingling with, you know, world champions like Jamie Bull. And that'll definitely be inspiring. That's how I got to this level, is just hanging out with Wade Cox and Carl Roberge, and it makes a big difference. So I think the future's bright. And actually, I'll give everybody a little glimpse into the business side. The water ski business has been growing, and wow, actually quite well. We're pretty mature. We've been around 100 years. Water skiing's been around 100 years. The industry's probably been around 50 of that now. And yeah, often when you have a mature industry, you see small growth, 1%, 2%, 3%. The last 5 years for the water ski business has been great. It's been good growth, you know, maybe upwards of double digits. So,
okay, so let's turn that around a little bit. Is there anything within the sport of tournament water skiing that kind of frustrates you?
I wish there was more money for the pros, obviously. Syndicate's sponsoring this event, and we do have a little bit of outside industry money in with Miles and sand and gravel, but I wish we could have bigger purses. We could support travel. We could, you know, and I think we're going to get there. I think we're going to hook one of these big fish who can help support us, because we're a large company, but we don't have the bankroll of a Bud like they used to, or yeah, things like that. And I wish we could do more, because I think these athletes deserve it. They're very committed. They travel all over the world. They really put on a hell of a show. I always think that. I was at the Water Ski Nationals watching Freddy Krueger jump under the lights at night for virtually nothing. And I was like, man, the dude is putting his life on the line for this crowd, and that's special. So I think these guys, you know, I really hope we can continue. I think with the broadcast you guys are doing, I think, and the professionalism of the athletes, we're going to get back to bigger industry sponsors.
And I would certainly hope that happens, you know, going forward, you know. But here at Hilltop, there'll be a good crowd of people. I mean nothing like the Bud Water Ski Tour or Michelob Dry or what have you back in the day. So, I mean, I'm guessing in a lot of ways, the expectations that people have for this sport in terms of its exposure kind of have to be a little bit re-examined a little bit in the face of new media, YouTube, all of that kind of stuff. Would you go along with that?
Totally. I don't think it's necessary to have, you know, 10,000 people on the beach like there used to be. In fact, I think it's the world's changed. Social media, YouTube, things like that. People are going to get out. They're going to live their life, do their thing, hopefully be on the water, skiing or wakeboarding, and then tune in, you know, watch the finals, watch the recap. And that's great. It's just different than it used to be. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I do that a lot in all other sports, you know. In the winter, we'll go out and snow ski, and in the evening, I'll watch a recap of a ski race or a free ride contest. And yeah, I'm not on the slope watching, but I'm just as much of a fan and a consumer as ever. And I'm out doing stuff too. So it's cool.
Excellent. Let's focus a little bit about you on a personal level now. So, I mean, you're probably gulping, like saying, what is he going to ask me now? But yeah, but I mean,
nothing to hide, Tony.
So, I mean, you've been in this sport for how many years now, would you say?
I skied in 25 U.S. Nationals in a row. I counted the other day.
Wow, you should get yourself a set of steak knives for that.
Totally.
So you've been involved in the sport for a quarter of a decade now. How did you get into it?
Well, I grew up in Michigan. My parents were teachers. We lived on a lake in the summer. A lot of people in Michigan have a lake house in like northern Michigan. And we lived up there for 3 months. And my family skied, but not like this. We had just recreational skiing. And then one of the guys down the block, he had skied for Michigan State, the water ski team. And he taught me kind of how to do the slalom thing, although we didn't even have buoys at that point. And then my other good friend, okay, Paul Larson, put a slalom course in on the lake, and we started going around the buoys, and we got hooked. And then, not to have too long a story, but my family lived in Florida as well, and we started going down there to visit them Easter and winter breaks and things like that. And I ended up going to ski with Carl Roberge at the time, I think.
When was that?
Mid-90s, I think. Yeah, early mid-90s, somewhere in there. And at the time, I think 200.
I think about the time that I was there, right?
Probably.
Probably. I mean, just like passing through in the night.
Yeah, everybody was there. I remember the first time I went to Roberge Roberge is, I think at the time, maybe 10 guys in the world had jumped 200 feet, and maybe six of them were there jumping. Yeah. And I was a teenager, and that had a big impact on my life. I was like, wow, I want to do this. I learned to jump, and I was hooked, and yeah, I ended up being a slalom skier, more or less, but that was what got me into it, you know?
Yeah, jumping's considerably high risk. I mean, in your stable of skiers, Wade Cox, you know, I mean, he was a jumper. He was a great jumper. He was a great jumper. Yeah. And then just one accident and then broke his leg or something like that. And then he had to evolve into a top-class, world-class llama.
Yeah, I don't know if I have the story right. They used to call him the next Sammy Duvall. That's crazy to think of Wade like that. But
yeah.
Then he broke his leg very badly. He did come back from that, actually, and I think he jumped quite well, but I think his slalom took off. And I know he and Roberge are very close, and I think at some point, I don't know, he just committed to the slalom, and thank God, man, look at that career that Wade had slaloming. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
He was my hero as a slalom skier, and now he's a great friend, so it's cool.
So yeah, so I mean, you talk about the influences and stuff like that. I mean, you just spoke about Wade. Any other influences at that time?
I think Roberge and Cock and Wade were my big influences as a kid. I work with Bob Lapointe now very closely. I'm a little too young, or I was a little like not tuned in to really be as influenced by Bob, but as I've grown in my skiing and met, I mean, it's amazing the impact that the Lapointe brothers had on skiing, and I'm just super grateful for getting to work with Bob all these years and learn from him. So it's funny, like, even though I wasn't maybe influenced him when I was young, as I've gone older, I've been heavily influenced by him. And so yeah,
I mean, even as you're producing skis now as vice president of HO, you can't help to be starstruck a little bit. I mean, I've got Wade here. I've got Bob Lapointe over here. What else can go for you in that regard?
It's pretty cool. Yeah, you do get starstruck every once in a while, and you get a little intimidated when you got a ski and everybody in the boat's won the worlds a couple times, you know. But I'm a good skier, but compared to all those guys, I mean, that's a different level. So, but you know, I would say about the whole crew is, even though you've got probably the biggest names in skiing, the ego doesn't get in the way. They all really are collectively trying to work together and make good stuff. And occasionally we really nail it and we make the best product in the world. So couldn't do it without them.
All right then. So, I think we've probably expended all the we've got here for this webcast, for this podcast. I'm sorry. The webcast is TWBC with the pictures. The podcast is just me with an audio recorder here doing the best that I can. But is there anything you'd want to end off with, thanks or what have you, before we put a button on this?
I think I want to thank Gordon Skoog and his family for hosting us here at this event. I mean, we're sitting here on the lake. It's one of the most beautiful lakes in the world, and this really wouldn't happen if it wasn't for him. I mean, I know it has the Syndicate logo on it, but to be honest, it's really his event, and we support as we can. I really want to thank all the people for coming out, all the families for coming out, because like I said, I was heavily influenced by the pros at a young age, and hopefully we're doing that for a new generation and we can grow this thing. And then thanks to you, Tony, and everything you guys do, because I really think with the broadcast, it adds a ton of credibility to the event, and it brings so many people into this event who can't attend. So yeah, thank all the volunteers for helping out.
Excellent stuff. And that is a Dave Wingerter from HO Sports. And until the next edition of the TWBC podcast, it is ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.